So, Freilichen Chanukah, welcome. This week we're going to be starting a new topic, the next section in Shulchan Aruch on Hilchos Tzedakah, and that is the amount, how much you have to give. When you look at that question, there's two kind of points of view to that question, the person that's giving and the person that's receiving. Meaning, how much is the person that's receiving entitled to ask for? And how much is... Right, so that's exactly my point. Meaning, I don't like using the word entitled because I don't think Judaism entitles you to things. I think it obligates people to do things, but that's a point
you
of...
You don't have to write a blank check?
But that's a point of contention between me and some other people. But
by the way, that's an interesting question. You know, this war business, I'm getting emails from charities I don't even know who they exist.
That's right, because you gave your email to one of the charities, and it's
so
worth
and
money.
It's
worth money to them.
I've been
getting stuff from Catholic charities.
No.
You don't get that?
No.
Oh, I guess I'm giving to the wrong places.
There is some place in Baltimore.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
So the list. I'm getting emails from places, and literally they are.
I don't even have to worry about the charities. My credit card has my name spelled wrong. I'm getting emails that are addressed to me, spelled with my name wrong. I know even what credit card that was.
Okay. Well, so as I said, I don't
think they're entitled to extra.
Yes, so I don't think that Judaism entitles you to things, but I think it obligates people to do things. But just because
some
we don't have
obligated to take.
Well, just because we don't have a better word. We'll say how much is a poor person allowed to ask for, and then you have obviously the other side, which is how much am I expected to give? Now, on that side, from the giver's perspective, you have. You could have a minimum and a maximum. So that's also something we're going to have to talk about, both the minimum and the maximum. So, but before we get into Gemara or...
Isn't it also what you have to give to the kupa or whatever, and what you can give or should give separately?
Yes, so we'll get to that as well, meaning there might be a difference between standardized communal donations and personal ones. So we'll get to that as well.
You take into consideration the 10% the guy has who gets kickback for asking.
kickbacks is another...
10%?
It's
where'd
usually...
you find somebody like that?
Are you kidding?
No,
it's
no.
More.
Of course, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, if it's
50% or something.
I don't know.
And he gets a percentage of cashing the check, too.
Yeah.
So,
Look, my father-in-law used to say, the saying is, Leolam Tikach.
Okay. Well, so before we get to Shulchan Aruch, before we get to Gemara's, let's look in the Chumash. So, open up to page 1016. So this is the Parsha of Tzedaka we've been reading a bunch of times over the last few weeks. So if you look there... how much are you supposed to give?
And now I know the stuff. Anyway.
So if you look in here, how much would you say you have to give?
Where we look there.
In 1016, the paragraph starting from Pasuk Zayin.
Aser ta'aser.
So it doesn't say that in Tzedaka. Aser ta'aser is another concept. That's
whatever lacking him. But what does it mean? Are you talking about basic like food?
Okay.
Clothes,
so
housing.
So
or what he's used to.
What
he's
used to.
So right. So what you've identified is that the Torah does not give a percentage. It doesn't give a fixed amount. It says what he is lacking. Mm-hmm. And as Marty said, that can mean a bunch of different things. I could be lacking a mansion. I could be lacking a mansion.
There goes the whole group.
What did you say?
Don't worry about what he said. Just sit down, relax, take it easy.
We can fight with him later.
It says that I could be lacking a bunch of things that I want. I'm lacking a mansion. I'm lacking a limousine. I'm lacking anything I want. So the question is, what is considered to be a necessity?
It's subjective.
Exactly. It's subjective. Exactly. So now the question is, are there other numbers in your mind? So David, you already mentioned Meiser. Now that pasuk, Aser to Aser, is talking about Meiser Behema, I believe. Right. It's giving a tenth of your animals to the Kohanim, to the Levium, etc. So that's giving a very specific amount. That's a very specific type of Meiser.
Also
by Truma. So Truma is to a Kohen that's, 2% around.
Well, yeah,
there's also giving a Meiser to the Levi, a Meiser to an Ani sometimes. All of those things are amounts that we give, but with the exception of Meiser Ani, none of them are to theoretically poor, or necessarily poor people. Kohanim could be wealthy, Kohanim could be poor. It kind of depends. The other thing is that what you give Truma and Meiser on are very limited. Mida Oraisa, it's on a couple of species, fruits, that's it. Not even vegetables. Mida Rabbanon, we add that you have to give Truma and Meiser on vegetables. But if somebody is from Shevet Zvulun and they're doing commerce, they're doing international commerce, they don't have to give Meiser on anything. So the question then is, we have this concept called Meiser Ksafim that some people talk about, giving a tenth of kesef, of your money. So where does that come from? That's something we're going to talk about. And that concept has been ubiquitous in Judeo-Christian society. So Mormons, if you want to be a member of the Mormon community, you have to give a tenth of your earnings to the church. That's why the church never has to ask, because if you don't give, you're not accepted.
Is that recognized by the Fed?
Is that it's organized by the board of Mormons?
For sure. It's also the Christian tithing.
Exactly, and that's based on the concept of Meiser, but we don't have that in the Torah. We just have it on specific things. So the question is,
but what about Yaakov?
Ah, so we're going to get to that. So in two.
Question, Ed, Kenny? What's the question?
Yaakov. He says,
Yes. Yeah, so, what's it called? In 2 weeks ago's parsha, Yaakov says,
whatever
you give me. What's another one of the avos that gave Meiser? Yeah, Avraham, after the war with Sodom, with the four kings and the five. No, but it said to Malki Tzedek, he gave a tenth of the spoils.
So he gave up everything. At the end, he gave up.
Well, everything. He gave back to the king.
Which was totally destroyed in the end.
Yeah. So I don't want to. That's a separate. That's a separate.
The question is: should he have taken it from the? King
that's
of
the
stone?
Question. That's the question.
Baltashkes.
You're right. That is the question. If he didn't leave it, then he would have had it been destroyed.
Yeah. So Avraham also, and according to the Medrash, Yitzchak also gave Meiser. We have the famous Medrash about Esav trying to show his false piety by saying, "How do I give Meiser from Saul?" Yes. So it's a joke. Rabbi Berman, the president of YU, he says, "Meya Sha'arim." It says that Yitzchak had Meya Sha'arim. So he says it wasn't a place in the old city where people didn't work for a living. No, it's talking about where somebody who did work and then gave Meiser. How they darshan it is a separate thing. But Meiser is one of the customs that that all of the Avos, we have documentation that the Avos observed. And in fact, Meiser goes back even not in the Torah. We have secular documents. I'll show you some when we get up to Meiser. We have documents from both pagan and secular institutions during the times of Tanakh that gave Meiser. So miser back then was structured as both a religious and political tax. So the concept of the Torah now saying, I want you to take miser and give it to the Levi, I get that. That makes sense. I want you to give trumas miser to the Kohen, I get that. Miser ani is something that does not exist in the non-Jewish world at that time. It was either a political or religious tax. The concept of miser sheni, taking a tenth, keeping it for yourself, and eating it in the Beis HaMikdash, I don't think we have any parallel to.
We also have Yosef taking 20%.
No, that's a vassal.
That's a tax, but we're talking.
Yeah, so we'll get to Yosef hopefully soon.
Very, very generous, by the way. Oh. No, historically speaking, yeah. I was taken from the Serb. They take 40%. It never happened in the history such a low.
Yeah, so we'll get to Yosef actually before we get to Miser, because as we'll see, there are three shiurim that we'll see in the Shulchan Aruch now about amounts of tzedakah to give. So let me just open it up. I gave away my last handout, so let me go get a sefer. No, it's okay.
I told you not to come.
Nice guy.
Yeah. It's not my fault. I can count.
You have to mediate between them. Right. Sitting between them.
That doesn't make any difference.
I've asked for years. All these Israeli institutions come here asking for money, right?
Yeah.
Does anybody in Israel give to DACA? They give to these institutions.
They give a lot.
You have to remember, a dollar goes three times as far farther than a shekel.
Three times? Four times?
No, it's three. The shekel's doing phenomenal. Have you been following it?
Not closely. No, it's because we canceled our trip to Israel.
But the shekel's doing phenomenally well.
You're not sure which one?
Okay, so as you can see, there's a bunch of books here. I don't know if we'll get to all of that today. So in Hilchos,
Rabbi, I can share something.
No, it's good. We're good. I have all the things I need here.
It's gonna mess it up anyway.
So we're up to.
Someone called
me. My wife called me. She wants to figure out where to buy a single bottle of beer.
Oh.
I'm serious.
Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
So we're up to Simen Resh Nun. It's the first page in the booklet. So the title of the Simen in Shulchan Aruch is Kama Ro'i Liten L'chol Echad V'Echad. How much is fitting to give to each person? So the Shulchan Aruch says, Kama Nosnin La'ani. How much are you supposed to give to an ani? De mechsaro asher yechsar lo. Whatever the poor person is lacking. So now he's going to explain what that means. Ketzad, how is that? Im haya ra'av, if he's hungry, ya'achilehu, you should give him food. Hayitzarach lechasos, if he needs clothing, yechasu, then you should give him clothing. Ein lo kli bias, if he doesn't have appliances. Konalo clay bias. Then you're supposed to get him appliances.
Where is this?
It's the first page in the Shulchan. Oh, I'm reading the wrong one. I am sorry. I am so. You were right. I read the wrong one. I am so sorry.
Resh Mem Tes.
You're right. I am so sorry. Resh Mem Tes. I feel so bad. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
No, you're right. I'm sorry. See, that's why I
told
I need
you.
To
if he didn't show up, he would be reading the right one. It's all your fault.
You're not the first one who said that.
No. It's him.
Okay, I'm sorry. Resh Mem Tes. It seemed different than what I had prepared. I'm like, all right, I'll go with this. Okay, Resh Mem Tes. Kamachayev Litain Bekitzad Yisnaig. Exactly, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay, everybody's...
I know where you are now.
Okay, I am sorry, guys. Okay. Resh Mem Tes. I'm sorry, guys. Shir Nisinasa. How much are you supposed to give? Im Yado Maseges, if you have enough. Kefitz Orachaniyim, whatever they need. Now, what is it that they need? See the next one, which I started reading before. We'll do that after.
Stay tuned.
Exactly. But if you don't have enough to fill whatever that need is, yitain ad chomesh nechasav. You should give up to a fifth of your assets, mitzvah min hamuvchar. Mitzvah min hamuvchar means the best possible. Okay, so what you're saying is that, we'll see that in the Gemara. What you're saying is that there's a principle saying if you're going to spend your, literally it means to waste away your money, but if you're going to spend your money on a cause, either tzedakah or maybe all mitzvos, you shouldn't spend more than a fifth. So that sounds like it's asur to spend more than that. Here, it's saying the best possible way is up to a fifth.
So now, the Rabbi Midwins has a beautiful drasha about tzedakah.
Yeah.
Hey, tzedakah, tzadi and kuf.
Yeah.
Aser. And dalet and hey, four to five.
Oh, cool.
Okay, that's Rabbi Midwins.
Rabbi Midwins. Okay, very cool. Okay.
Kuf and Sadi,
yeah.
you leave for use 90 from the 100. Hey and Dalet, maximum from the 5 portion, you keep yourself 4.
Oh, that's very cool. Okay, I like that.
I've got two questions here. When the Rambam talks about, now, don't give too much. Impoverish yourself doesn't work.
Yeah, so we'll see why. We'll start it this week, and hopefully next week I hope to do a little bit more of the history with you as well, which is the reason why you're not supposed to give more than a fifth is because then you'll need. Then you'll become poor. So now, Kenny, you asked, does it mean including a fifth or less than a fifth? It seems to be a fifth is the maximum.
20%.
20%.
It's not 25%, which is what a chomesh is.
Right, so we'll see. Some people say that, so we'll see.
Yeah, okay.
We'll see. We'll calculate. But it's either 20 or 25%. And then mitzvah min hamuvchar means what?
The best possible thing you can do.
That's the best possible thing you can do. Is there an inyan of, let's say I have an esrog, right? So I have one esrog that costs 10% of my money, and another esrog that costs 20% of my money or 25% of my money. Is it a mitzvah min hamuvchar to buy that esrog?
Oh, that's interesting.
No.
You say no. Why not? No. You say no also.
It's the same in the Torah.
Right.
Torah hasn't told you what to spend.
Right, so the Torah hasn't told you what to spend. Now, there is a concept, which we'll see, of hiddur mitzvah, of doing the most beautiful type of mitzvah. But do we ever call a hiddur mitzvah min hamuvchar? We'll have to see that.
By definition, the hiddur is...
Right, so maybe what you're saying over here is that this mitzvah, all other mitzvahs, like, okay, so I have an esrog, so a prettier esrog is this general principle of doing mitzvahs in a more beautiful way. Over here, the hiddur is literally doing that mitzvah, just fulfilling the mitzvah even more. Meaning, if I have a prettier esrog, I'm not fulfilling the mitzvah of lulav any more than I would be if I had a regular esrog. But if I give $10 or I give $20, it's obviously a bigger mitzvah because I'm giving more money.
Why? Why would you base it on money, though? It's just, it could be that the guy who's selling it to you says, this cost me $20 because I got it from Italy, and this cost me $10 because I got it from Eretz.
Oh, okay.
Okay, it has nothing to do with the beauty of the Eretz.
You're right. That's true.
Wouldn't the Hindu mitzvah still be, basically, if I have A mitzvah, A esrog for $10, and B esrog for $10, and I look at the two, and I'm supposed to take the one that's more hiddur, whereas I don't have to spend the extra $15, because that's going to be used for some other mitzvah.
Ah, okay, so now you're saying, oh,
something else in there.
Yeah, yeah, you're adding another layer, which will be important, which is I could spend X amount of money on an esrog, I could spend more up to a fifth, or I could use it to pay my kids' yeshiva tuition.
That's correct.
Which I've heard is
less expensive than an esrog.
Which may be less expensive than an esrog, depending on what kind of esrog you get.
Right.
Yeah, so it's these are all good points, and we'll try to touch on as many of them as we can.
Some cities give you money for
it. Yeah.
Florida, they give $7,000 a kid.
Now, what's the difference?
Iowa is 8. Iowa is 8.
Yeah.
You want to live in Iowa?
No, that's why they're giving you $8,000.
So you're right. So over here, I think the reason why they say mitzvah min hamuvchar is because by definition, the more you give, the bigger the mitzvah, because I'm doing more of it.
Who puts a size on the mitzvah? You either do it or you don't do it.
Right, but over here, since the mitzvah is to give money, the more money you give, the more mitzvah you do.
So, hold on one second. You're giving mitzvah to an individual, not a mitzvah to an esrog. Buying the esrog is not a is part of the mitzvah of doing for lulav and esrog.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter how much you spend on it as long as you have an esrog.
Right, that's exact. Right, yeah, you're 100% right. That's my point. Meaning, mm-hmm. The reason why I don't say taking a beautiful esrog is mitzvah min hamuvchar is because you're right. I have an esrog. I'm not doing the mitzvah any differently.
The mitzvah really on the lulav because that's when you made the brocha.
That's a separate thing. I don't want to get it. Maybe by Sukkot time. Anyway, so that's one amount, a fifth. Now let's see the next amount. The echad me asara and 1/10 mida beinanis. So that's sort of the middle. So 1/10 meiser. So that's another shear. Pachos mikan, less than 1/10 ayin ra. You're stingy. V'chomesh ze. Now we're going to figure out how do I calculate what a fifth is. She'amru, that we're talking about, shana rishona mehakeren, you take a fifth of the principal of whatever assets you have, mikan ve'elach, and then going forward, chomesh shehirviach b'chol shana, you only calculate a fifth of whatever you gained that year. So, it doesn't say that that's how you calculate meiser, but that seems to be the practice, we'll get into it later, but if you ever have to calculate how much you're giving to tzedakah, mm-hmm. You don't calculate revenue, you calculate profit. So if, it's the same thing with taxes. If you have a certain stock portfolio, if certain stocks won and certain stocks went down and you sold them, so the way you tax it is you figure out the difference, and then you pay taxes on whatever your net gain is.
Yeah, but that's not what he's saying.
I think that is, no?
No. What he's saying is
you shona rishona.
Right. No, I'm talking about future years. You're right. Shona rishona is the principle. So if I, let's say the first year I'm doing this. Okay.
You give $1 million. Your first year, you have $1 million. You make 20% on your money, which is $200,000.
Yeah.
And on that, you could give up to 20% of that.
First year.
The first year.
No, it's an asset tax.
Yeah,
so
it's an asset tax the first year.
So the first year you're giving tzedakah, you have to give 20% of your net worth.
So the first
year had $1 million of assets,
and then he realized gain the next year. That's what you give the 25%.
Right, meaning so if 20. So if you have $1 million portfolio, you give $200,000 the first year, and then 20% of whatever that remaining $800,000 generates profit on.
Okay, now if it doesn't generate a profit,
so then you don't give tzedakah.
So let's see. You can't go back to the first year and take it.
That's a crazy way of doing it.
You don't need to give it back.
That's taking away the principal. It's one thing. Accounts will never tell you. Never touch your principal.
So again, that seems to be a difference.
And then what do you meha keren? How do you define the keren?
Yeah. So
if you own a house. You own stock. You have money in the bank.
Are you talking about liquid assets?
That's what I'm asking.
It's a very good question. We'll get into that as well. Just as a spoiler.
Excuse me. Don't write up Yitzchok. Don't write on the paper because we have to return it.
No.
20% has to go back.
I'll give you a little bit of a spoiler. We only give tzedakah on liquid assets. meaning whatever you've sold or done business with.
Uh-huh. Well, not the first year.
The same.
Yes.
You know, even if I have, if
what
I.
What is Kevin? Okay,
yeah, Kevin. Do you pay tax on your house when you go to value?
Only no, no.
It depends on what the tax is based on.
Okay, so we'll get into the Shenari Shon a little bit later.
The tax is based on illiquid assets. Yeah, you go broke on the 20%.
Yes, I get it. Yeah, so if I'm just holding shares, I don't think that I... You don't give...
But I'm not questioning subsequent years. Subsequent years is the revach.
Right. Okay. So we'll do.
We're talking about the first year. What do you base it on?
Okay. We'll get into that later. Let's finish with the Shulchan Aruch says. then we'll get into the Gemaras and we'll talk about it. So then we get into what Yitzchak was saying in the Haggad. The Rama adds va'al yivazvez adam yoser mechomesh lo yitzdarich lebrios. So the Rama adds that you should not give away more than a fifth so that you won't become poor yourself. Mm-hmm. We'll skip the parentheses. V'dafka kol yimei chayav. This is only while you're alive. Avo b'shas moso, but when you're about to die, yachol adam litein staka kol ma sheyirtze. A person, you don't have to, but a person is allowed to give away whatever assets they want. We'll see that that's not actually entirely true. That it's usser to... do what's called ma'avir nachla. You are not, there is a mitzvah that you are supposed to pass on your assets to your kid, to your descendants.
And also ksuba to your wife.
And a ksuba to your wife, meaning, and those are mitzvahs that you have to do, and if you don't, it may be a low sasa.
You didn't know that.
Now you know
you
why.
You signed it.
You know why I didn't die yet.
And if you don't do that, it may be a mitzvah slosa. It's probably a mitzvah slosa, say, of not doing inheritance properly. So what they say is that you have to at least give something significant to your descendants and whatever the ksuba says. And the rest you can give away. But you have to give something. It can't be a dollar. You have to give something significant.
I remember a very, very serious case, and even the Gemara on Poskim, that someone hated his children.
Yeah, it's in the Gemara.
To give money, and the rabbi took part of it, and part of it give to the children. Okay,
yeah.
That was the case.
Yes, yeah, so he went around, meaning the rabbi said, no, you have to give to your kids.
Yeah, but he did not give the whole money to the children.
No,
one says you have to give everything. Okay. But
the father said, don't give them anything. Nevertheless,
they gave.
Okay.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's my point. Meaning you don't have to give everything to your kids, but you have to give something significant.
Don't plan that.
okay.
We do anything.
Yes.
Let's continue now with the Rama.
This one who comes, it's the one we pick on.
Nobody's picking on you.
The ein laasos mi maaser shelo davar mitzvah. You can't use meiser money for a mitzvah. Kigon, if you turn the page, neiros lebeis hakneses. Even for something that's not like an official mitzvah, but for a mitzvah purpose, like electricity or candles for the shul, oshar davar mitzvah or anything else.
Is Maaseh Sheni, right?
We'll see what Maaseh Sheni.
No,
where
my related to Maaseh Sheni?
It might be Maaseh Ani, it may be Maaseh Sheni, it might be both. We'll see.
Rak
yitnenu la'aniyim. The only thing you're allowed to do with this Maaseh money is to give it to poor people. Which also, again, we'll get into this later, but practically speaking, there are many causes that are tax exempt. The question is, can you use your Meiser money for it? You know, there might be very worthy causes that are mitzvos, but if it's not to a poor person, you might not be able to give your Meiser money for it. So, for example, political lobbying, you know, like Teach NJ. Or Teach NY or World, like the OU coalitions that give money for schools. I don't know if that's considered aniyim or not. You could make the argument, well, you know, there are some parents that aren't able to foot the cost.
And the money is going to pay the tuition.
So maybe you can make that argument, but it's hard to, or APAC is probably even easier, where it's a mitzvah to give to them because they're doing things for Klal Yisrael, but it's not, well, that's a separate cheshbon, but it's certainly not aniyim. So that's...
It's interesting if you think about it. You look at American taxation.
Yeah.
All these institutions are taxed. You know, you can deduct your taxes. APAC.
APAC, you can. Okay.
It's a political organization.
It's a PAC.
It's a political organization. Okay.
So you can give them under the Democratic or Republican Party.
It's also not deductible.
No, that's not deductible.
No,
same thing.
No, it's the same thing.
Okay, so now let's see Sif Beis, and then we'll stop with the Shulchan Aruch. La'olam lo yimne adam atzmo pachos mishlishis hashekel l'shana. A person should never give less, shouldn't hold themselves back from giving less than a third of a shekel per year. V'imnasan pachos mizeh, and if you give less than that, lo kayim mitzvah tzedakah, you have not fulfilled the mitzvah of tzedakah. So we'll get into this more later. How much is a shlishis hashekel? Depending on how you calculate, the higher number would probably be like 1,000, which we don't paskin like. The smaller number is probably around $55.
You hear nicely worded in the Sifter Kohen.
Okay, yeah. So this
fantastic ring. You take mamash, you buy silver, and you give her 1/6 of okiyah.
Yeah. So we'll talk about how you calculate the third of a shekel, but it probably comes to around $55 nowadays. So we now have. We now have four terms. We have de mechsaro, that ideally you should be giving, if you have an infinite reservoir of money, you should give enough to take care of whatever needs this poor person has. If you don't have enough for that, then you should give a fifth. If that's the mitzvah min hamuvchar, if you want to be an average person, you give a tenth. And if you don't, then you're a stingy person. So then we have Sif Beis, which says, look, you know, if you're really poor, you're even giving a tenth is significant. So the minimum amount, which we said even aniyim have to give tzedakah, is a shlishis hashekel. You have to give a third of a shekel, however much that is. So now those are the numbers. So now we'll try to get into some gemaras about where that means. So it's 3:05 now. So we're obviously not going to get into all the gemaras, but we'll start off with the one in Ksubas because it's the shortest. That's the next page, I believe, in the booklet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Here we are.
It's on Nun, Ahmed Aleph.
Yep.
And then where did I put it on the English?
On the next page,
it's the very beginning. Okay. Yeah, it's the very beginning of the English. One second. Let me find it here for me. Second Aleph. Okay, yeah. So we're at the very top of Nun Amud Aleph. We're up to Omar Rev Oshia. Omar Rev Ila. Sorry, Omar Rev Ila. Okay, that I had. I just read it wrong. So that's the middle of the third line. Yes. So Beusha Hiskinu in Usha. They made a takana. So hopefully next week I'm going to try to go into a little bit of the history around it. The Sanhedrin, where did the Sanhedrin meet ideally?
In the
Lishkas Hagazus. Literally, it's the chamber of the hewn stone. It was right next to or part of the Beis HaMikdash complex. And both during the first Beis HaMikdash and during the second Beis HaMikdash, that's where they were. However, during the second Beis HaMikdash, we know, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says, that there were 10 exiles that the Sanhedrin had. There were 10 exiles. They started off in the Lishkas HaGazis, and they moved around. Now, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah right before that says that in Bayis Rishon, in the first Beis HaMikdash, the Shechina exiled itself 10 times. So there's a very interesting, I think it's pretty obvious, if you study the history, what a lot of historians of Second Temple Judaism have remarked is that you see a transition from Avoda and Nevuah in Bayis Rishon of temple service and prophecy to Torah in the second Beis HaMikdash, and that's what allowed Judaism to survive without the Beis HaMikdash. And Chazal are showing that by juxtaposing those two statements, that the Shekhinah during Bayis Rishon had 10 exiles, and then in the second Beis HaMikdash, the Sanhedrin had 10 exiles. It's the same idea, that the presence that gave the Beis HaMikdash its sanctity and gravitas at the center of Yiddishkeit became displaced. So the first place they were in was the Lishkas HaGazis, and then they moved before Yavne, they were in Yerushalayim, but they weren't in the Lishkas HaGazis. Why did they do that? That seems, according to the Gemara, it seems to have been self-appointed, meaning they weren't forced to do that. They weren't kicked out. It seems to be there's a halacha that Beis Din can only give the death penalty to someone if they're in the Lishkas HaGazis. Now, we also have a concept that a Beis Din that kills more than once in 40 years is a murderous... whatever the number is, they're a murderous Beis Din, meaning we don't like to do this. However, Beis Din is not going to ignore their charge. So, if you know the history leading up to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, there was a lot of killing going on. There was a lot of criminality going on. There were thugs, there were ideologues, there were zealots, and there was a lot of killing going on, and there was a lot of political instability. And so Beis Din said, we can't deal with this. We're going to move outside of the Lishkas HaGazis so we don't have to deal with capital cases anymore. Then, after Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, that story in Gittin where he asks Vespasian to save the Sanhedrin, he says, "Tain li Yavne v'chachameha." Mm-hmm. So they went to Yavne. So Yavne is near Ashdod on the coastal plain. Then the next stop after Yavne is Usha. So this is, so to speak, the second stop after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash.
By the way, strictly speaking, when you said about all the Sikari Kohen, the portrait of Yehuda HaNasi, Bechlal.
Okay.
They try to make peace with the Roman, and you can see immediately, even in the Galil area, that they willing to accept the Roman was kept entirely okay. The area they rebuilt was destroyed.
Yes.
Very, very interesting, you know. And they say if Sforna also bring it, if we're in peace with try to be more tolerant to the Roman, maybe things will not be as bad. So they, I don't know.
Yeah, so you are right that the hotbed of rebellion was more in Yehuda, more in the Yerushalayim area. The Galil was a little bit less... they were a little bit more tolerant, and so the Roman occupation and persecution was much less there. That's why they relocated up north to the Galil, where Usha is. I'll try to show you a map next time. And so in Usha, they made a number of takanos. Many of them had to do with financial stuff.
Is this Rabbi Idla, the father of Rabbi Yehuda?
No, the Eli.
This is Eli.
Eli is
Eli. I think it's a different person. I think this is a different person. So the reason why this is in Ksubas is because the previous takana that the Gemara mentions has to do with essentially making sure that a woman, when the husband passes away, that there are funds that are reserved for her and a certain amount. So now, once we're on the topic of takanas usha, we're going to mention another one about ostensibly tzedakah. Amar Rabbi Ila. Rabbi Ila said, "Beusha hiskinu." In Usha, they made a takana. Hamevazvez al yevazvez yoser mechomesh. Somebody that spends their money or wastes away their money, they shouldn't do more than a fifth.
Wasted away their money or wasted away their charity. Rashi says la'aniyim.
Ah, so okay, so we'll again, I'm just literally translating. Oh, okay. I'm literally translating. What does bizbuz mean? Means to whittle away, to...
Clearly, look at the Rashi in the Bible, we give you everything.
You just said that.
So that we'll finish the Gemara, then we'll see Rashi. Tanya Nami Hachi. We learned in a Braisa. Hamivazvez al yivazvez yoser mechomish. Again, same idea. Why? Shema yitzdarech lebrios. Because maybe you'll come to be poor yourself and you'll need to rely on others. So what does that sound like? It sounds like that Chazal were concerned that it's practical motivation. Meaning there's no religious or Torah idea here. It's just the Chachamim said, look, you're going to be poor. That's inefficient. So we don't want you doing this. Keep that in mind. Umaisa be'echad shebikesh levazvez yoser mechomesh. Somebody wanted to give away more than a fifth. Velo hiniach lo chavero, and his friend didn't let him. Umano, so who is that? Rebbe Yeshevav, or Rebbe Yeshovev. V'omrila, Rebbe Yeshovev, velo hinichu chavero, umanu, Rebbe Akiva. And Rebbe Akiva didn't let him. Amar Rev Nachman, v'itema Rev Acha Bar Yaakov. So Rev Nachman, or Rev Acha Bar Yaakov, said, Maikra, what's the pasuk? So now I have a question for you. So if we just said that it was a takana, why do I need a pasuk? It says the sages made a decree. So what do I need a pasuk for? So this is what's called an asmachta. An asmachta is that the sages looked for inspiration from the Torah to guide their takanos.
I got another question, though.
Okay.
Way different from that. Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yeshova, if you look at the text of the Asara Haride Malkus, Rabbi Shuvah died much later than Rabbi Akiva.
Okay. I mean, it could be, I mean, they could still be alive at the same time, no? Or like, it's even, I mean, I think that the furthest difference between the two deaths were about 100 years. But I don't think he lived, but I don't know if it's, I don't know if Rabbi Yeshovev necessarily, I can check up the chronology, but I think they could have still overlapped. You're right, they may not have been the same age. But, I don't know,
once you die, you die.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I'm just saying, I think they could still be alive together.
Gotta remember that.
It's not paying for my wife.
That's right. He doesn't care.
I said it's
on the same time. It's only so.
It could be. I don't know. I'll try to check up the chronology. So what's the pasuk? V'chol asher titein li aser asrenu lach. So this comes from Vayetze, where Yaakov makes his neder to Hashem. And he says, whatever you give me, I'll give you a tenth. So what's the obvious question? That's not a fifth.
It's not a fifth. Yeah. It's close. It's like gematria. It's close.
So, yeah. So the question the question is, so how do we get that? So, aser asrenu. It's like a double tenth.
Double tenth.
So a tenth plus a tenth equals a fifth.
That still doesn't make any sense. Why? You could go ahead and jump, 30 plus 30 equals, 60, and it's, that's 60% of it. Doesn't make any sense. Okay, I get it.
So the Gemara is going to ask a question. V'halo d'mei isura basra li'isura kama. So if you take 10% and then you take another 10%, that's not 20%. That's a little bit less than that.
But
so
that's
the,
like truma,
right? I mean, so it's like truma. It's like meiser. So, but the Gemara says
10% of this and that's what's left. No, over. You take that. It's really like 19%.
Meiser Levy is 10% of the.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
Then you get 10% of what's left over.
Right. So the Gemara, but the Gemara doesn't answer that. The Gemara says Amar Rav Ashi Asrenu Labasra Kikama. The language of the pasuk seems to say that it's an identical meiser. So now we have an interesting question then, which is the Torah, the Chachamim. Why did the Chachamim look to this pasuk?
What's the question?
Why did the Chachamim choose this pasuk?
This is Yaakov.
Maybe there is connotation to the Asher.
So,
no, Asher Shitit Asher.
Okay, so you're saying that it has to do with wealth?
No, it kind of. Give it, look, if you give, money, God will give you.
Right, okay.
Okay. So, right.
You ask me I
don't have a problem with that. So you're saying that it has to do with giving. God gives you money, and so I pledge to give it back, so to speak, to give part of it back. Exactly. You realize that everything comes from Hashem, and so as I said, as you pointed out, Yitzchak, if you look at Rashi over here, Rashi is on the third line on the inside column. Hamivazves, Rashi says, la'aniyim, to poor people. Now that makes sense to us, right? Because we're talking about tzedakah. What was Yaakov doing? Who was Yaakov giving it to? Was he giving it to a poor person? No, he wasn't. He was giving it to God.
Yeah. Everything else he gave to Esau.
Right, so he gave a lot to Esau, but that's not what he was talking about here. That's not what he wasn't.
Esau wasn't an honor.
I can tell you right now.
He had Ra. He had Yeshua right. Ra.
Well, yes. Even if you didn't take his word for it, 400 guys.
You didn't come alone, that's for sure.
That's right.
So the point that I want to bring out is that there seems to be a disconnect between what we're talking about and what the Pasuk is talking about, and nevertheless. Mm-hmm. The Chachamim said, we're still going to use this pasuk. So it could be like the general idea of realizing that I have to give back, and sometimes I give back to God, and sometimes God wants me to give back to the poor people. I'll show you this next week, though. Rashi, as some of you may know, wrote multiple versions of his commentary to Shas. Sometimes we have the earlier version, sometimes we don't. Most times we don't. If you look in the earlier version of Rashi here, instead of saying la'aniyim, it says lehektish. So in the first version of Rashi, Rashi said, we're talking about not tzedakah, we're talking about giving something to the Beis HaMikdash. Now, there's a bit of a problem with that pshat, which may be part of the reason why Rashi changed his mind.
There's no Beis HaMikdash.
Right. Which is, if we're talking about in the time of Usha, there is no Beis HaMikdash. Now, Rashi was still a pretty smart guy. Rashi was probably a pretty smart guy, so, you know, it wasn't that like he said, you know, he must have been thinking something. So, yes, this might be the more rational Mestaber Pshat, but what was he thinking of at the first place?
Well, maybe some of his students said to him, what are you talking about, Rashi? There was no Beis HaMikdash then.
No, correct. But where was Rashi coming from at the beginning?
Because of what the pasuk says,
right? So Rashi was obviously motivated from this pasuk. This pasuk is a prototype of hektish, mm-hmm. And so Rashi said, "Well, presumably, then it's talking about hektish." So maybe, like what you said, maybe there was a concept of hektish even when the Beis HaMikdash wasn't around. Meaning, I'm dedicating something for God. I can't do anything with it right now. But when the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt, I'll have it. There's actually a Gemara, I believe, in Shabbos that says that there was one Amora from the times of the Gemara. He kept a list for all of the karbanos he's obligated to bring when Mashiach comes. He kept a he kept a list, and he sometimes pledged karbanos.
You can give it to the Beit Din. If no Beit Din, you can give it to the rabbi. And he will give the tzedakah.
Okay.
So Yaakov, for me, can be considered as a rabbi. He will keep the money, and when he finds people to give, he can give it to them.
But so what did he do? So Lemaisa, when he came back to Eretz Yisrael, what did he do?
He took from his own wealth.
Right, so what did he do?
He's like a rabbi, okay? He's appointed. So we trust him enough. In due time, if you find some poor man, he gives it.
So you're saying that when Yaakov told Hashem, I agree, but you're reading that into the story. You're saying when Yaakov said lach, he's saying I'm just going to give it to.
I'm trying to get out of the question.
No, okay, that's a good answer, but we have to realize that that's a chidush.
That's not the answer here, though.
That's a chidush.
Trying to get out of the question.
Yeah. No, it's a good answer, but we have to realize then that. What Yaakov meant when he said to God, he didn't really mean to God. He said, I'll give it to people that you want me to give it to. That's a...
The concept of bedekabai.
Okay.
There are a couple of pails.
Yeah.
One of them has nothing to do with the Beis HaMikdash at all.
Bedekabai does. That's how they fix the Beis HaMikdash.
Yeah. But isn't there one that there's one for Korbanos and one?
Yeah, there was one for Korbanos, one for the Bedek HaBayis, and one for the one was like the Kohanim's like discretionary fund. But I think that was still, part of the Beis HaMikdash stuff. I'll check. I'll try to check Masachas Shkalim. So these are all different answers, and we'll get into it more next week. What I want to just leave you with.
By the way, Tosfos will give you much more problems during the Chumash.
Tosfos will give me more problems. Which Tosfos?
Beautiful.
Which Tosfos?
For you, David.
Why? Wait, which Tosfos?
Which one? The Halodam Mimach Adekama.
Which one?
Okay, that's this after Mechumash. Omer.
Where are you reading?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
What's the
Divine
Master?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 line from the top.
No, that's Rashi. That's not Tosfos.
I'm sorry.
Rashi's on the red.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry. But also, he gave very nice question. No, before I was confused between Rashi. Okay. So, the Risha Kart Lekama.
This is not your morning class, you know.
Left nine. The Hia Klat Midi Let Maaser Dido Naul Kama Hu Ve En Kan Chomesh Vishneem.
Yeah, exactly. That was the question that the Gemara was asking. Yeah, he does some fancy arithmetic. The idea, though, that I want to leave you with is that there's...
I'm sorry, I said that. That's what I mean.
Yeah, no, it's all good. Well, the idea that I want to leave you with is that there seems to be a link between Hekdesh and Tzedakah.
Okay.
And there's going to be a lot of overlap between the laws of Hekdesh and the laws of Tzedakah. And it could be that Meiser, so a Chomesh now, so a fifth. This is the last point, is that what was the rule? Hamivazvez al yivazvez yoser mechomesh. That there seems to be an isur, there seems to be a prohibition motivated out of economic factors. Meaning, I know that if you give 20%, statistically speaking, there's a good chance you're going to wind up being poor. So,
especially if you're paying tuition.
So by Yaakov Avinu.
No, that's so,
so by Yaakov Avinu, why are we? You know, how do we know that Yaakov's good enough? Maybe Yaakov just decided to give 20%. But who says he? Maybe he could have given more. Maybe he could have given less. Meaning, if our whole concern was about somebody might give so much that they'll become poor, what does it have to do with Yaakov? Maybe Yaakov gave too much, maybe he gave too little, and I don't know, maybe he wasn't concerned about being poor.
We're trying to justify the number 20%.
Right, okay.
And you're using Yaakov as the base, right? And you don't know how much Yaakov actually gave, you don't know how wealthy he was or what the situation was,
right,
or when he gave. So how could you use Yaakov in the first place?
That's exactly my question. So what it seems to be, the way it's the Chachamim seem to have used this pasuk, is that Yaakov knew that the maximum amount that he could give without putting himself in financial harm's way was 20%. So we will follow his practice. Now, I don't know. Maybe he could have given a little bit more. Maybe he could have given a little bit less. We're working under the assumption that Yaakov is giving the maximum amount that a normal person could give without becoming poor.
Well, let's go back to the pasuk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yaakov at that point was in abject poverty.
Absolutely.
You know?
Well...
So you're right. It could be that their rationale was, look, he's poor now, so whatever he says now, it must be that he has a pretty good handle on his basic sense of needs.
If his logic is true, and that Yaakov is poor at the point,
yeah,
he could offer 100%. He has nothing to offer.
Well, again, he's talking about in the future.
The point is, it's just a number. It's just really a number. It's a percentage.
But looking at two different periods of time,
Call him not just T-Tang Lee. It's not what he has now.
Well, he's not talking about now. He's not talking about now. Okay, so we're done for this week. The final question, which I want you to think about, is this is a takana. This is something that Chazal made up, at least according to the Bavli, the Yerushalmi may argue historically. But the Bavli believes that this came up in Usha probably in the sometime in the second century. What happened before? Before Takanas Usha, how much could you give away? How much should you give away?
But or maybe they saw that people gave away too much.
Right, I know what I'm saying. But before that,
hold on,
how much?
But when,
think about that. There's a big machlokas.
But also in the time of Ezra, in between the two temples, Ezra's biggest problem was the rich people were rich, and the poor people were very, very poor.
Yeah, there was a wealth gap.
And I don't believe they gave tzedakah because the rich people kept the poor people poor because that's who they borrowed money from.
Okay. That could be. I don't know.
No, I'm serious.
No, it could be.